Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is former Waterford hurler and manager Derek McGrath. Derek was in charge of the Crystal County for 5 years, from 2013 to 2018, seeing them lift the league title after an unbeaten campaign. Myself and Derek have become close friends over the last, I suppose, 2 or 3 years, and I'm sure that it'll pop up during the interview how we met and how we've built a friendship over the last couple of years, because he's a top man, one of the nicest men that you could meet, and a great hurling mind on him and a great sports mind, and just like myself, he's sports mad, so we get on very well. So I'm sure we'll bring it up in the interview how we met, and we'll give you an old story, as they say. So yeah, thanks a million for tuning in. So sit back and enjoy the show. Derek, come here. Thanks a million for coming on today. How are you?
Good, Ian. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. All's good up in Waterford.
Yeah. We I'm not sure how it is down the southwest now, but the weather hasn't been great the last couple of days. But a little bit brighter today. And Waterford played Limerick in a minor hurling championship last night, and it was a bit of a monsoon journey. So not sure how it's been down in Kerry.
Yeah, no, it's been horrible. Really, the clocks are going back. Is it next week they're going back or forward?
Forward, I think.
Forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Forward, fall back, yeah.
Yeah, good man.
You might just paint a picture for the listeners. I get every guest to do it about, I suppose, your childhood growing up in Waterford. You grew up in, was it Ballybeg?
Yeah, I grew up in an area called Ballybeg. It's, for anyone visiting Waterford City, it's probably on the right of what we now call the University of SETU, S-E-T-U, SETU. People probably know it as the old Regional College, or WIT. Grew up there, yeah. It's a very, very working class area of Waterford City. Great memories there. Went to the local national school there, St. Saviour's National School, and played with the local club there, St. Saviour's. Great friends. I won't say I was reared in the street, but I benefited a lot from probably the streetwise kind of behaviours over the years. Great, great childhood, brilliant childhood. One older sister, Nicola, she's 5 years older than me. She's 51, 52 this year, I suppose. I'm 47 this year. So, yeah, we spent most of our childhood there, I suppose. And as I said, you learned a lot because, you know, it was an area that, I suppose, you know, you had to be able to kind of survive there, I suppose, as much as anything else. You know, it was kind of, you'd learn, and you'd have a great appreciation for everything going forward, you know, growing up in an area. Just loved it. Loved the camaraderie of it. Loved the togetherness of the community, and loved the ordinariness of it, if that makes sense. You know, there was no airs and graces, and it probably stands you in good stead going forward.
Absolutely. I say that to everybody. I think growing up in, even myself now, say growing up in a council estate with suppose young people my age and stuff, I think you learn a lot streetwise. You know, you could be playing a game of soccer and a fella could give you a kick, and you learn a lot about yourself and streetwise, like you said, growing up, and even in a council estate like myself. I say that to everyone. Was hurling always in your, I suppose, your childhood growing up as well? Did you play any other sports as a child growing up?
Well, you know, I might as well be completely honest, since we're going to be full kind of, I'm going to, I suppose, divulge everything in that. We weren't really allowed. We have a very traditional household. Mum and Dad were very traditional in terms of the sports and in terms of mass and Catholicism as well, the religion, I suppose, that, you know, the Irishness was in the house, and the feeling was, I suppose, that if you're handy at the hurling, you should stick at that, and the jack of all trades, master of none, was the maxim in the house for many years, that you just stick at the hurling. And so I probably, as I got older, 16, 17, I snuck a few soccer matches in, I suppose, without telling mum and dad, you know, kind of, not that they kind of subject you to a beating or anything like that. And it was just more like they felt that we had a chance maybe of making it in the hurling. And retrospectively, I often think that I was kind of a 3-year minor with Waterford and 4 years under 21, and I only had 2 or 3 championship appearances at senior level. So retrospectively, and even with my own kids, I'm happy to go against that grain and kind of make them sample most things, if you like, before they kind of hone in on one thing. And again, that's not to the kind of, I suppose, talking derogatory about my parents, if you like. That they felt, I suppose, that was the right thing, and you'd be more focused if you're focused on one sport, you know. And I you know, it was always the hurling, and I suppose I you know, and the hurling helped even in respect of schooling and being a little bit more focused and a little bit more disciplined in school. And as I said already, where I grew up, there was lots of fellas with different interests. There might be fellas that were interested in, they wouldn't have a huge interest in school, and it always, the hurling was always kind of a way of kind of everyone coming together, if you like, regardless of backgrounds or interests.
Absolutely, it's a great way to, I suppose, get together and, you know, meet up with friends and stuff, as everyone, I suppose, around the country does. Did you, I don't know, was I reading it somewhere before, you went to college, did you go with Eamon Fitzmaurice?
I did. I actually know him better through management than I do through UCC, if you like, because I was in UCC from 94 to 98. And actually we would have associated Eamon Fitzmaurice as being really handy hurler at that stage. I think is a Fanoog, or I'm not sure the pronunciation.
Yeah.
That and Paul Galvin, we would have associated them with when they're hurling down in the college. They were obviously part of a very good team in college themselves. But Lixna, I think, is the other kind of club I can think of.
Because of North Carolina.
I went to UCC for 4 years and I went for 4 years to do a 3-year degree, Ian, so make that up yourself. You know, but yeah, look, I played in a great Fitzgibbon team down there with Joe Dean and Shawnee McGrath and Frank Lohan, and I lucky enough to win a couple of Fitzgibbons, and more so lucky enough to just have with some crack in college, you know, with some crack in Cork. And it was always a big Kerry contingent in college, but I probably got to know Eamon a little bit more on the management side, just throwing over a few texts when the heat was coming on for both of us, I suppose, in Waterford and Kerry, when things are not going well, you might just send a text of support, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I always felt he was a really tuned in guy in terms of tactically, and just a really shrewd Kerry man, if you like. Not that there's many shrewd Kerry men, says you.
Kerry man. Would that be kind of common sometimes between managers, like would they give each other the heads up now and again?
Yeah, well look, I would have shared, I'd be good over the years, I would have been good buddies with Micheál O'Donoghue, and you know, he was the Galway manager. Then you kind of parked the friendship, or you probably when there's a possibility of coming up against each other, you might park the kind of the friendship in respect of what might happen between you if you met, you know. So it's easier probably to share a few ideas with people of the football fraternity. So like, I've been on holidays in Spain the last few years since I left the Waterford job, and I've hooked up with Mickey Graham, the cabin manager, and developed a good friendship with Mickey. He's a great company, great crack. You know, we've had a few beers on holiday and shared a few ideas around you know, football and hurling and the correlation, etc. And it was actually on the back of Eamon Fitzmaurice's I think statement or resignation, when he kind of spoke about, you know, maybe some criticism he had received, that, you know, that acted out almost as a catalyst for me to contact him when he was finishing up, if you like that.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he dealt with that really admirably and really kind of like you know, really well, in terms of just stepping away, because he felt, I think the word he used was a lightning rod for criticism, or lightning rod for criticism, if you like. So I just thought he showed great grace and courage. So look, everyone wants to win and everyone wants to try and find a way to win, and I think Fitzmaurice's stamp is still on that Kerry team, in terms of, you know, even if you see his involvement now with Fusa, you know there's obviously he created enough impression on the Cliffords for them to say, hey Jesus, let's make sure he's involved with us, like, you know. So sometimes the legacy is only kind of, I suppose, remembered in his absence, if you like.
And that's what the GA is all about. Like, you even see there when something bad happens, they come together, people up the country. Like, I got Hurley's sent from Kilkenny, Waterford, and I had my accident signed. Like, you know, it's like a family, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, it's especially significant when something of you know, not a tragedy or some an accident or something happens, you really see the good in people. You see the, and you know what, you see it at lower levels. We've all seen it, the tragedy around poor young Dylan Quirk there last year, and you know, and hey, people have rallied around that, and rightfully so. But there's things that happen at a lesser level. Every every night I'd argue in club situations where a club stalwart is laid to rest and the community just gather, or a club, even it might be a club man or a club lady in bother, like, if you like, they might, you know, in addiction or in terms of gambling or in terms of alcoholism, and you often find that you know, the club people are in the GAA are great to rally around people and just put their heads together and say to themselves, what can we do for A, B or C? And I think that's very evident all around the country. You'd often see that, as you know, I think people are getting better to make sure even that people are not isolated. Sometimes you see people stepping away from clubs, they feel a little bit isolated or left out, and I think, you know, people are getting better at ensuring that there's nobody left out as well, as much as anything else in terms of tragedies or deaths, that people are just always feel part of their club environment.
Absolutely, and like you said, it goes Dylan Quirk there not too long ago. That's just more evidence. I want to touch on, I suppose, when you're first involved with the intercounty team, you were 16 and when you went in with the minor team. Do you want to bring me back to that? Did you always know that you were going to get up to that standard?
Well, look, I had a full head of blonde hair. You might so things change, and I was about 10 and a half stone, so I'm not sure. So I suppose, look, I'm probably one of those fellas, Ian, that fits into the category of being very good at that young age, you know, kind of,
yeah.
You know, I suppose better than I ended up being at senior inter-county level, albeit I had a fairly good club career, if you like, with De La Salle, but yeah, I had a chance, I suppose. I would have, you know, at Tony Forrestal, I played a couple of years in a row at under 14, so it was probably signposted. And the irony of it is, my best year of minor was probably the year I was under 16, where the pressure was very, very kind of, there was hardly any pressure on me in terms of the whole environment. And we actually got to the All-Ireland final that year against Galway, beaten in the All-Ireland final by Micheál O'Donoghue, who's Galway, and beaten then obviously in 17 by Micheál O'Donoghue, who's Galway as well. So yeah, that was a brilliant year and a real confidence booster in terms of playing on that kind of scene for the first time. In actual fact, we beat Clare in the first round and we beat Kerry convincingly in the semi-final. I always remember a guy called Ollie Diggins that was playing with Kerry, and I just remember following his career path afterwards. He was really good that night we played Kerry, and that was my first encounter in terms of playing Kerry in a hurling match. And look, we went on to the All-Ireland final, beaten in 93, we were beaten by Shawnee McGrath's Cork team in the first round, and then you had no second chance back in the day then. And in 94 we got to the Munster minor final, I was captain, and we were beaten by Sean O'Gahalpin's Cork, as I call it, Sean O'Gahalpin, and a brilliant centre back for Cork called Kevin Egan. Yeah, they were a really good team, and their star player was actually Darren Ronan rather than Neil Ronan, and I think that Cork team were beaten in the All-Ireland final by Galway, by Kevin Broderick Galway. So yeah, that was the career path in terms of minor, and I have to say I loved it, absolutely loved it at underage level especially.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram as always, ianoconnell321, or drop me an email through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break, throw on the kettle, don't go anywhere, we'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with former Waterford hurler and manager Derek McGrath. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show, or you can find this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. You mentioned Kerry there playing the hurling, and even I suppose other teams, I say, up the country, and especially Kerry, I think that, can you see from a distance the progress that Kerry in general are making in hurling and other teams up the country, like in the last number of years?
I can, and it's important not to be patronising, because there's a lot of column inch is given to this topic in terms of what's the spread of hurling and you know, the gospel and how people spread the gospel of hurling, and little pockets of hurling located in Kerry or Derry or Down, etc. And so I think it's important to kind of categorise it as yes, the answer is yes, you can see the progress. Yes, you can see the passion for the for the game itself and the love for the game. I remember being down in Bannastrand as a young lad, staying in the chalets there in the old Banna Beach Hotel. I'm not even sure is it called Banna Beach Hotel anymore, but years ago. And we used to go into McGilligot's. My four-year-old father and mother used to bring us into either Sullivan's or McGilligot's. And there was a hurling alley down the road from it in near Ballyduff. And we used to be down the hurling alley and we'd meet up from the locals then. They were mad into the hurling there as well. So this runs deep. The importance is, say for instance, if you take, to answer your question a bit better, if you take the game last year between Kerry and Wexford down in Tralee, where you have this, you have a kind of a heavy hitter coming down playing a seemingly kind of a minnow, if you like, for want of a better word, right?
Yeah.
It's to consistently give Kerry the opportunity to be able to do that without the deflation of heavy beatings or anything like that. You know, so if you take the Division 2A at the moment, or you know, you have Kerry and Offaly, I think, playing to meet Kildare in the final. It's designing a system that allows them have a prolonged spell in the division with the heavy hitters, and have the resources and the finances necessary to be consistently competitive. I suppose that's the thing. That's the thing, yeah, I'd say. Yeah. You know, and listen, I don't have to remind you about 1993 when Kerry came to West Park and beat Waterford. So there's a shock in every team, but it's just trying getting the teams to kind of be consistent, I suppose. And that's where the argument or the debate is.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Like, you know, and there's upsets like that in every sport, you know, and it's like you said, it's just starting to be consistent then. Do you want to talk to me when you were a member of the panel of the De La Salle team to reach the county championship decider, weren't you?
Yeah.
Do you want to bring me back to that? What did that mean to you, I suppose, to be part of the panel and of De La Salle as a club in general? What did it mean to you?
Yeah, well, again, I'll give you the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I already described to you where I was a Ballybeg man and played with St. Saviour's, and I suppose no different in lots of places. There was a bit of a disagreement, shall we say, in St. Saviour's in that our kind of club manager at minor level, we won the minor A at St. Saviour's in 1993. And there was kind of a disagreement then, and our club manager, we felt, was a bit isolated out of our club, so kind of we left in objection. So 26 of us left the club, okay, in St. Saviour's. So that kind of one club mentality, that parish, that kind of orderliness of Ballybeg, I suppose, 16 of us, I think, went to different clubs. 10 just gave up, if you like. There was lots of people that, you know, they went somewhere for a year and then they gave up. But there was 7 or 8 of us went to De La Salle, and we went to De La Salle because of the school connection, obviously. And a couple of us had gone to school in De La Salle, and we went up there because of that connection. So no different than any club, it takes a while to bed in, but you always feel like that you're, because you went to school in De La Salle, that you're part of the fabric and the furniture there. So, you know, that became home. You know, as I said, not making it quite as a senior hurler with Waterford. I was on the panel, all right, from 96 to 98, and come on, in an All-Ireland quarter-final in 98 and with Waterford. But I always enjoyed back playing with the club because you felt like, I suppose, you felt you were a level above, if you like, because and even though you were a level below, so I don't know who I could compare it to. There's probably footballers in Kerry that play with the Crokes or Fossa that haven't quite made the step up to Jack O'Connor's squad, but when they play with the club, they're probably fairly prominent with the club, you know. And that's where I was, I suppose. I enjoyed it. We made a breakthrough in 08, won a county championship against Abbeyside. I was centre forward, pulled my hamstring in the week of the match, so I didn't actually play till the All-Ireland semi-final. We won the Munster club, we beat Cushendall in the All-Ireland semi-final, and we were pummeled, beaten comprehensively in the final by Joe Canning's Porthumna. Now they left a kind of trail of destruction wherever they went, that team, so we don't feel too bad. We won another one in 2010, Munster club again against Thurles Sarsfields, and in 2012 then I was in the management. We won the championship and we were beaten in the Munster club final by Thurles Sarsfields. So it's been, you know, we haven't won one since, and it's Ballygunner have dominated down here since, and it's hard to kind of bridge the gap, if you like, but the boys are trying hard.
I want to talk about when you stepped in as coaching the college team in De La Salle. How was that for people that don't know? Like, you're obviously teaching now in De La Salle. What was that? Did you always want to, I suppose, be a teacher when you were growing up? Was that your aim all along?
Yeah, I wanted to be a PE teacher if I could, right? And I didn't get the points. PE teaching is very hard to get in UL, you know, and
you have to have another subject with it there, do you?
Yeah. And I would have picked English, and it's just the points were 90. I did my leaving twice, so I did it in 93 and 94, right? So in 93, I was offered arts in UCC, okay? So I said, I'll try and get the PE teaching, I'll go back, I'll go heavy at the study and blah, blah, blah. And unfortunately, I missed it then by, I think, 10 to 15 points. And
sickening, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, you know, it's I'd have an issue with the whole thing because not just the study levels, maybe I hadn't the mental capacity, but, you know, just even people that have a passion for sport and teaching it, I think the system should be kind of nearly streamlined to ensure that people that actually have a real interest in sport are streamlined into it. That's a debate of a whole different sort. But look, I always associated coaching with teaching, I suppose. Because look, Ian, no different than yourself, if I was in the SEM now, as he called it, I think, or you know, there's always, you'd have a class of 25 young fellas, and there's, you learn a huge amount from the young fellas in the class. Like, there's fellas of all different characteristics and traits in the classroom, and I always feel as a teacher you just learn so much from them, and you're trying to impart your bit of knowledge, but you're also trying to learn from them and find a way to deal with the young lad who perhaps is coming in and his mum and dad have split up over the weekend, or a young lad is coming in and he's looking for 600 points, and another young lad's come in and he's an addiction to video games, and there's all sorts of personalities in the classroom, and in many ways that's probably similar to a dressing room, in that you'll have a couple of mavericks in a class in a team where geniuses that mightn't be as committed as they should be, and you're trying to turn things around and get everyone on the same page. So I think teaching is a good means of doing that, if you're not too indulgent, you know, if you kind of know your limitations as a teacher, you know.
I know what you mean. Obviously there was probably a few of the people that you are teaching that were playing then when you took over managing the school team. What was that like, I suppose, going from the teacher in the classroom to roaring at a fellow for not marking his man on the pitch?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, it was always a help, believe it or not, in the classroom, in that it helped. You might have an absolute lunatic of a guy on the hurling field, but if he's in your class, he's a tendency to kind of throw the line because you're involved with the hurling team, you know. So and I must say, the players that we were involved with, you know, that ended up playing with Waterford, lots of them, say the Mahoneys or Jake Dillon or Stephen O'Keefe or Barry Coughlin or you know, guys that played with Kilkenny, Peter McCarthy, Danny Purcell, they were just the best of lads, you know. I mean, the solid Noel Connors, Stephen Daniels, just really, really solid guys in terms of their behaviour and a bit of ambition in school, and they were a good crack too, you know. And you know, we had some great times in school, in that we lost the White Cup final, which is the under 15. We lost the Dean Ryan final. Noel McGrath destroyed us in it, and we eventually won the Harty in All Ireland. And do you know what, it was a real appreciation, having lost all the way up, that we got over the line. And we had, you know, we went to Newcastle on, you know, to watch a match as a group, as a Harty group. We went to Antrim, you know, on training weekends, when training weekends weren't probably par for the course back in 07 and 08. We were kind of getting them in, and we were leaving the boys have a bit of crack while they were away as well, you know, have a bit of banter and loosen the thing a small bit, I suppose, in terms of just
their whole. Was that in 07, Derek?
Yeah, in 07, yeah.
Yeah,
and it was just a brilliant atmosphere in school, because I'd often say, when you're in school and you have the boys on site 5 days a week, it's a great opportunity to build a proper bond. And we'd have fellas from Munkine, Piltown, Ballygunner, De La Salle, Passage, Aaron's Own, Mount Sinai, just bringing them all together, you know, under the umbrella of De La Salle College as opposed to De La Salle Club, you know, albeit a LaSallian institute, is, you know, I always found it a real pleasure, like, because we have the best of lads.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I hope you're all enjoying the show so far. I'm here today with former Waterford hurler and manager Derek McGrath. You can get the interview straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website, or you can get it through Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Was it in 2 you claimed the All-Ireland against Kilkenny CBS, was it?
Yeah, we won back-to-back. We won the CBS, we beat Kilkenny CBS in 07, and we beat Thurles CBS after a replay in 08. So I looked similar to, I'd imagine, you know, when Darragh Moynihan, I was following their progress in Clifford, and then when they were winning with Brendan's there, you know, the Hogan Cup, you have the bit of crack afterwards. It's great for confidence booster for the lads. And they get into the kind of winning mode, if you like, when they step up into the next up to the next level, and they have a bit of confidence on the back of that.
When you were appointed of the senior manager of Waterford in 2013, was there any manager that you because I was actually talking to Liam Daniels, who you obviously know as well. Was there any manager that you faced and that you always not found it hard to break down, but was there anyone that you kind of said, right, we always have a good crack off them, and it was always a good game?
Yeah, good, great question. During the time, I suppose, we were involved, it was like I would have come up against Brian Cody a few times. Davey Fitzgerald was player manager. Jimmy Barry Murphy initially was the Cork manager, and then Kieran Kingston was the Cork manager. Never really kind of wasn't my way to get into a kind of a direct head to head row with one. Albeit in 2016, we played Kilkenny in All-Ireland semi-final replay in Thurles, and I got into a bit of an argument with Brian Cody, and it was like one of those arguments you get in where you kind of almost pretend to be held back. You want someone to hold you back, because you know if Cody gets a hold of you, he's going to absolutely kill you. So there was an argument over a line ball, and we had been 5 points down, and we got it back to a draw, and it was, you know, the blood was boiling, and you know, both necks were red, shall we say. That's all I'd say. And you know, but it, you know, I got the feeling then this fella was towering over me, about 2 feet over me, and I was saying to myself, "Jeez, I hope it was Fintan, actually, Fintan O'Connor, who was Kerry manager for a while. I said, I hope Fintan holds on to me here, because if he lets me go, I have to face this fella, I'm going to be in bother, you know. So look, we get it. So in terms of just your question originally, it's very hard to figure out all the time what Davey Fitzgerald would do tactically. He's always thinking, you know, always thinking outside the box. And sometimes you have to kind of say to yourself, I'm just going to concentrate my own lads here now, because if I don't, I'm going to lose the plot in terms of the thinking. Cody was just such a competitor. Like, yeah, you could be playing Cody in the first round of a league, and you might be after winning, you know, our second round of the league, you'd be after winning the first round. It'd be the same perhaps as it might be on All-Ireland final day. So he just brought consistent competitiveness to his squad, and that's permeated its way probably to Derek Ling's squad now as well. So they were probably the two hardest, and so, you know, you just had a tendency, I suppose, to try and get on with people as well without being too affable, you know, get on with people and look after your own team. And I'm not sure how valuable or how effective it is when you're constantly, you know engaged in kind of rows which are opposite number. And I just don't know about that, but sometimes you have to show passion nonetheless.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with a bit of handbags, they say these days. I wanted to say to you, De La Salle, that has a long tradition of, I suppose, what would I put it, connections in Kerry, like the Walshes from Ballylongford, Jackie and Barry, they went to school in De La Salle where you're teaching, did they?
They did, and I'd be familiar with those, and we were a boarding school, I suppose. I was a first year in 1989, and we would have huge connections with Kerry, and two of our most, I suppose, famed, three of our most famed brothers, I suppose, that we still have five or six brothers that live in the building on the seafloor in our school, and we're blessed to have them in the building. And the head of the house is now brother Thomas Walsh, who actually, you might be familiar with David Walsh, former owner of NetWatch. I think, you know, and he and brother Tom was groomsman for me at my wedding. We'd be great buddies, you know, and he's always flying the Kerry flag for, you know, he's always hopping balls, shall we say. I said earlier something about a shrewd Kerry man, and I said it in jest, and I can tell you brother Tommy certainly fits into the category of shrewd and just able to hop balls, if you say, as they say in Waterford, able to kind of have a good joke. And I think his brother Joe was involved in the Kerry board as well, in terms of the hurling board from Kilmiley. So all those people have a massive connection. Only a couple of months ago, we buried brother Timothy O'Shea, great Ken Mayer man, and he was brilliant for us in the school in terms of the hurling. He was the bursar of the school.
So like a father figure.
Yeah, and so when we were trying to commercialise, I suppose our approach, not commercialise, but try and get more resources into the school in terms of hurling, instead of having one slitter or two slitters that you'd say, listen, this is what we need to do. He was a visionary. Like, he was a fella saying, I agree with you, we'll back you 100%. You know, and you've just, you know, sometimes the narrative around, you know, old-fashioned, you know, older people can be, they're not innovative or not creative or not forward-thinking. And I would have always found my encounters with the brothers, Brother Tim and Brother Tommy, where they just had this vision, you know, great vision. And obviously that spirituality helps too. And of course, I can't go without mentioning Brother Killian O'Sullivan, another Ken Mayer man, who they call him the Doc in school, but he's now in Castletown in the retirement home. And he would always meet me and he'd be boasting to me about the Gooch on a Monday. Say, Kerry would have won a Munster final, and he'd say, ah, you've no one like the Gooch, he said. And he'd say to me, what do you mean, brother? I'd say, what do you mean, brother? And he'd say, he has it. And I said, what do you mean by it? And he'd just hold his stomach and say, he has it. And someday, he said, you'll find out what it is. And when your players have it, he said, you might win something, he said. You know, so he'd have a bit of crack with it. So he was a great man. And yeah, and I think there's connections with, you know, in terms of the hotel industry in Kerry or in Killarney specifically, the Randalls, etc. I think lots of those were boarders in our school, you know, so they'd have a good affinity and association with our school, you know, because I know when we're ever having a fundraiser, they always get tapped, God help them, they're always all the poor, the past pupils are got, you know, there's a big list got out and they say, oh, we'll contact this guy in Kerry, we'll contact, so I'd say they're sick probably to the teeth of the old alma mater letter arriving in the letterbox.
They come knocking. During your career, obviously now social media and stuff is huge, and I suppose back when you started your career, obviously it wasn't as big as it is now, and the pressure. Did you although it might have been unfair criticism, did you ever find criticism from the media? What kind of pressure does that put a manager under? I suppose if their team isn't performing, or if it's a something that the manager done. How did you cope with that? Did you have a release valve to turn to when you were under pressure from the media?
Initially, no. Initially, first year, I would say that I coped poorly with it. I you know, very sensitive to anything that was said, read everything, you know, and had a friend group that would, you know, tell me everything as well that had been said or in a negative light. You know, you kind of, and still have those friends, but I probably would have, as I said, as I'll answer the question, I'd probably categorise what I mean by what I'm saying. So initially, take my first year of Waterford, we were relegated, we were beaten by Wexford in the championship, and the criticism comes heavy enough, and it's at local level in particular. You know, everywhere you go, there's, and you feel it, and people say, oh, switch off, you know, you've exercise for switching off, or you have film, or you have reading, or you have, you know, your family life, and you have to compartmentalise it. And then I kind of came to the conclusion that, well, first of all, the epiphany moment for me was I made changes to the panel, I suppose. And I kind of said to myself, right, if I'm going to get the criticism and I'm going to take the hits, I'm going to do it in a manner that I feel it reflects myself, I suppose, and be a bit more authentic. So we omitted 10, 11, 12 guys off the panel and we went with youth. And I suppose cleverly that takes a little bit of pressure off you in that, you know, your people's kind of on the outside in terms of even media. They might say, actually, they're building towards the future, or they're there's a plan there for 2 or 3 years' time.
Controversy then when you've done that, Derek?
There was at local level, there was, even at national level, there was. And again, you take the heat, even there might be a representative of the person that was omitted from the panel on the county board, and you're almost feeling that there's a kind of a certain, you know, there's a certain air of, you know, sharpening of the knives, if you like, you know, and it's listen, that's hard, and that's part of it, I suppose. And I know people say, oh, when you sign up for that, it's part of it, and scrutiny is part of it. But if it's personalised, or if it's in any way, you know, the knock-on effect of it is to harm anyone's mental health, etc., or their family life, you know, you take one of the highest paid managers in the world at the moment is probably Graham Potter in the Chelsea job. And I read a couple of weeks ago that he's been subjected to, you know, threats, and his family have been subjected to, you know. And so now I do think we're getting better at that, you know. So I don't agree with the statement, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, you know. So I think we're getting better at kind of actually saying, right, give me some constructive criticism, back it up with good evidence, etc., and I'll be able to kind of take it on board. So, you know, I wouldn't ignore the critics, because sometimes you can learn a good bit from them as well, and you can kind of, in my absence from management now, you're kind of saying, geez, maybe this didn't work or that didn't work. So I'm not kind of completely stubborn enough not to kind of take some of the stuff on board as well. You'd be like that. So did it affect me? I'd say in year one it did, and then you make up your mind that this is the way you're going to do it, and you kind of just progress through the friction, and you find ways as well. You know, you read a good bit about psychological approach, you read about other managers that have struggled and have found a way through it. You know, I can't name a manager, for instance, that hasn't have a bedding in period. You know, we spoke with Eamon earlier. I remember when Eamon Fitzmaurice was in the Kerry job for the first time, I think he lost the first three, four league games, you know, and you're kind of trying to find a way through the hassle of it. And once you've good people around you in your management team, and you've a good bunch of players that are going to go to war together, not for you, together, you'll be the finest, you know.
Now we're going to go for our last ad break of the show. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, the last part of the show. I hope you're all enjoying it so far, so thanks a million for tuning in as always. Absolutely. And before we finish up, the championship will be starting now in just a couple of weeks. I know it's Limerick obviously are flying as Limerick are, and Cork had a few good games there in the league. I know it's hard to judge the championship from the league sometimes, but how do you see this year going? Do you think it's an exciting period for hurling in Ireland? Do you know teams' competitiveness?
Yeah, look, I'm going to wear the Munster flag and say the Munster Championship is just so unforgiving down here. You know, it's and with yourself, it's just very hard. The general consensus is that it's Limerick plus two others, and the other two others, whether it's ourselves, Cork, Tip, or Clare, it's just very hard to predict. And I said previously, I got a fierce slag in last year. We won the league last year, and I bigged up Waterford last year after the league. So in terms of this year, we've kind of, you know, we've had some really good moments and some really ordinary moments, and maybe that's the better type of build up in terms of psychological profile to go into it. Waterford are at their best when they're kind of in an underdog tag, and I think that's where they're at the moment. So for me, it's Limerick, you know, take the Keane Lynch situation, take the Peter Casey, none of them available last year, those two marquee players available this year, but they still have to go through and win it, you know. And the winner comes from Munster for me. I don't think Kilkenny and Galway and Wexford and Dublin are as close to the Munster teams as people's perceptions would have you believe. And it's it'll be, you know, without kind of wanting to sound too biased, we'd hope Kerry for the McDonagh and Waterford for Liam McCarthy, and maybe you can top it off with a back to back of Sam, because I think I've said it to you, not my Kerry connections, but I spent a lot of my childhood in both Clarny and Banna, and we've spent many summers over in a place called Dún an Uair as well, outside Ballyferrher there. You know, there used to be a lovely outdoor swimming pool there, and we had great memories, and we'd go up to Paddy O'Shea's pub every night, and I've pictures at home from John B. Keane's pub in Listowel, and I've pictures at home with John B. Keane, and I've pictures at home and with Paddy in 1985. I think Paddy was captain in 85 or 86 against Tyrone, one of the years. I've picture with the cup at home with myself and my cousin, and we've spent great summers in Clarny, both in the Glen Eagle, the old Tark Great Southern. I think it's not even I don't think there's anything on that site now at the moment. I think on the left hand side opposite McDonald's now. I know where McDonald's is, alright, that's the problem for me, but there's nothing there now, and we've great summers there, you know, we just magic summers there, heading into the Flesk restaurant, and we're heading down Easter weekend now to the Castle Ross. The family are heading down, my mother, my late father, we used to love heading to Kerry. And another great association with Kerry, Ian, was my father was in a band for years that were the resident band in the Dome in Tralee, you know, so when the when the we'd say that the yeah Nikki yeah and when the we'd say the guest artist would come on after the actual Rose of Tralee contest, my father's band would be the backing band, and we used to get free holidays, I suppose, to Blennerville every year. They used to be up on the hill as you come out of Blennerville. They used to be kind of chalets there. I'm not even sure they're there anymore. And I was actually down there a number of years ago. I became friendly with Donal O'Shea. You know, I kind of, when I watched and followed his story, and our boys in school had written some letters to Donal, and I became friendly with his dad, Finbar, and his mum. And, you know, just they were following our progress when we were Waterford, and we'd be following their progress when Kerry are winning. So love, real honour to be asked to do this today, because I'd have a massive association with Kerry as a child, and indeed as an adult. We've gone down there now, our own family, and please God, our own kids will continue the tradition of going to the kingdoms, shall we say.
So I'll give you a text on your down Easter weekend. We'll meet for an all apple juice or something. the last question before we finish up, and I know people are probably asking you after every interview, does Derek McGrath have unfinished business on the sideline?
I'd like to think so, yeah. Look, I have two boys here in the house, 8 and 9, sorry, Orne, and Fiona's 17, and Fiona's in fifth year now. I'd like to get him through the Leaving Cert. As I said, I'm not helping him with the Leaving Cert, but I'd just like to be here around him more when he's doing the Leaving Cert. And I wouldn't mind having a cut at something then, but you know, look, you can't pick and choose. You mightn't be everyone's cup of tea. You have to go through a process and the hunger has to be there. And look, I've probably been in a bit of a comfort zone the last couple of years in terms of you just picking in and out of this and helping out here and there. But yeah, I'd like to try and immerse myself into something over the next couple of years. Definitely, yeah. And it'll have to be right. Everything would have to be right, and you'd have to, you know, you'd have to be ready to do it and willing to do it. But yeah, I don't see myself being out for too much longer now, and that's being honest, you know.
Like you said, you like Kerry. There's always room on the Kerry sideline, Derek. Come here. Thanks so much for coming on today. I appreciate your time now, and I know you're a busy man, so thanks a million, Derek.
Ian, thanks for having me. I mind yourself.
Now, unfortunately, that's all we've time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show as much as I did, and thanks a million for tuning in, and a massive thanks to Derek for coming on tonight and having a chat about his own story, his own, I suppose, playing career and managerial career, and I'm sure he's not done yet in regards to managing. I was going to say, I suppose he's not done yet in regards to playing, but I'll let that decision up to himself. If the legs are still going as well as they were when he was lining out for Waterford and Croke Park, I'm sure there's another year or two left in him at club level. So thanks a million to Derek, and I hope you all enjoyed the show. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.